And welcome back. It's Friday. I'll tell you, the time is going very, very quickly, very fast. And what's going to happen in 6 months? I think the changes are going to be very dramatic in many cases. Everything's now in a state of real flux. But don't forget, it's being directed. It's not left to any kind of random circumstantial outcome. They're doing this. It is a plan. It's all by the plan. I'm not talking about minutiae, the micro, but the macro is clearly planned, and they know what they're doing. They've had, several thousand years of practice, something like that? Crazy. Are you there, young lady?
I am.
Just hanging out again, huh?
Right.
Nothing else to do. It's just waits by the phone. Okay. All right. Do people seem to understand the amount of control in which they are living? It's just a kind of a rhetorical question statement. Do you think they understand?
No.
I don't think they do.
No.
That's three no's. I agree. They
well,
don't have a clue.
If they did know,
how thoroughly controlled they are from cradle to grave. I think most of them wouldn't believe it. Some would want to get into a fist fight. You crazy? Talk to me like that. I'm not controlled. I'm free. No, they don't know.
Well, it's an illusion of choice, but, 95% of the population is having their reality created for them, and they don't even know it.
Nonstop. And their reality comes through that flat screen, however big it is, that's reality for most people. I'm not saying they think when they're watching it, this is reality. It just, in a de facto sense, becomes their baseline reality. That's how they relate to the world around them, through that which they have seen and absorbed. Whether they want to absorb it or not, it goes in. So that's their reality. And a lot of people, because of that, don't live in the real world. They live in a fiction-generated idea of an existence, and it's all through the media. It's an incredible power that's being wielded. It's just really overwhelming. Okay, where are we? I had some things I wanted to mention here. Let's see if I can find them. I don't know if I can or not. Say something fun here for a minute while I look. I'm going to find this. When you go to the store, do you see 41% of the people obese, like I did today?
Yeah, there are a lot of...
They don't look healthy.
No, but that's been the case for some time. It's certainly worse now, yes.
They are not happy. They are not cheerful. And if there is any smiling, it's usually a kind of a forced smile. Part of the job, got to be happy, got to greet the customers. But many of those people in those jobs don't make the effort anymore. They're kind of cold. They act like they don't want to be there. And I think that's essentially correct. They don't want to be there. They don't like it.
Well, we're definitely seeing, a lot of the more menial jobs being taken by the new arrivals, I would say.
That's what they call. That's what the White House wanted to call them.
Right.
You're right. That's good.
No, I mean that these ones have a modicum of, they're able to speak some English, and I don't know. My experience with them so far is at least the ones that are gainfully employed are reasonably pleasant.
They start out a little. Now here they are in the big time, so they do start out a little bit with a little humility. They realize that they're in the big show now, so they are a little bit shy. That won't last. That'll change. I've seen it.
Well, yeah.
Where's my note? Is this it? Here it is. Okay. There's several stories here I wanted to mention quickly and get your take on it. They're back with the mystery illness now spreading among cattle and Kansas, New Mexico, Texas, And it's the, guess what? It's the avian flu back again, now in cattle. So
I just heard something about monkeypox today. Did you hear that?
No, I missed it.
Oh, monkeypox is back, yep.
Well, the avian flu theoretically does not inhabit mammals easily. And now it's in mammals, and it could be easily tweaked to be a ravenous inhabitant of mammalian beings. Lots of them. So it's coming. They're calling this the mystery illness. There's no mystery about it. Experts confirm first bird flu outbreak in cows. Is it safe to drink milk? I'm serious. This is being launched now. This, who knows? This could
be
the next big one.
What about all these people on the carnivore diet? What are they going to do?
Well, I don't know what they're doing already, because one steak costs $36. What the hell are they eating? I don't know how you could be a carnivore in this market. You know, a shopping cart full of bleeding red meat would be $1,000.
Yeah, I don't know, but there are a lot of people on board with that right now. A lot of people.
Have you seen any shopping carts like I did that once?
No. I must be hitting the store at the wrong time.
Well, I honest to God, there was almost a trail of blood behind it on the aisle. It was horrible. All right.
Well, you know, when you can't make your own heme, you got to get it from somewhere.
That's
and
not
when
to
they
mention
run out of
the
meat,
adrenaline.
You know, I guess it could be that.
People always feel better after a steak. You know that.
People
the
are addicted
the better.
To meat, and they can't have their cow, and there's no chickens. Well, the human being might start to look pretty good.
It's coming. It's
yeah.
coming. I'm serious. Persistence of spike protein induces a state of chronic disease. Well, as if we haven't been saying that for 4 years now, but it's gradually becoming, I think, very well known among even the semi-informed masses that the spike is a bad thing. It's a very bad thing. There's another article. This is from Walter.
Sounds like Walter. Yeah.
Walter.
Chestnut.
Yeah.
Yeah, he compared it to asbestos. I think that's a reasonable comparison. I think it's more like
radiation.
Radioactive particle.
You got it. And Erica said this for a long time, that exposure is like radiation poisoning. It's very similar, and she's right.
Yeah, it creates
right.
that kind of oxidative stress. I mean, you remember when the first outbreak of the Wuhan variant in Italy, the few autopsies that they were allowed to do before they prevented them from doing them, they thought that these people had died of radiation poisoning. You know, they didn't think it, but they, you know, that's exactly what it looked like.
That was the profile.
And you can create the same kind of damage with iron that you can with a radioactive particle. Iron and oxygen, or iron and specifically hydrogen peroxide, will create hydroxyl radicals and burn everything that they come into contact with.
Yeah, they
all
take
that, that's all you need is iron and hydrogen peroxide, and then you've got that very, very toxic hydroxyl radical.
That's the worst.
And remember there was that news story in Japan of the autopsies, couple that they had done, and they said the bodies were still warm.
Still warm, a day later, I think.
I think it was more than a day.
Was it? It was at least
yeah,
a day.
Yeah, and so, you know, they were still cooking.
Weren't they in the 90s, low 90s or high 80s, something? They were warm. They didn't go cold.
Yeah.
They didn't go room temperature. So, yeah, that is a weird one. Think about that. That means your body is oxidizing. It's burning up.
Yeah, and, you know, it's got a catalyst there being, you know, the iron with the oxygen.
Well,
and when that starts, it's, you know, particularly with the lipids, it just keeps going. You know, unless you have what they call a chain breaker, such as vitamin E, DMSO will work as a chain breaker in that situation. But the problem is with this with this spike, with this type of toxin, the body becomes depleted in its own antioxidants. The amount of oxidative stress just outpaces, you know, the antioxidant defenses of the body, and that's why you get all this damage.
Dr. William Mackus has been spending more time describing cases of the severely vax-injured people, which is nice. We've been doing that for a long time. It's good to see any attention directed to the people who have been really brutally damaged with these things. Mackus has a headline here, mRNA injury stories, and the first one is, 24-year-old healthcare worker in Nashville developed a baseball-sized brain tumor. And that's followed by 15 more cases of vax-injured people. So cancer has been let out of the box, so to speak, and it's running wild. And the big part of it that is maybe the most concerning is the unvaxxed coming down with turbo cancers. That's time to get out of the building. You got to get the hell out.
I just read another report of a woman, unvaxxed, who had been around the vax that came down with breast cancer.
This should be maybe the most alarming part about this whole bioweapon attack on humanity. The simple fact that you can just be around these people and you can get dosed to the extent that you're going to end up with cancer and dozens of other potential things, almost as if you were directly injected with the bioweapon. It's almost the same result. Maybe it is the same result. Just give it enough time. Fenbendazole, ivermectin, another success story. Stage 4, cancer in full remission. Nice story. That's from the second smartest guy in the world. I like to see those stories. Blood cancer count slashed with Fenben and ivermectin. And sharp chest pain cured. And I'm wondering if that might be myocarditis. If there's a positive correlation between fenbendazole and ivermectin consumption and a diminution of myocarditis, I'll shout that from the rooftops. It is said
that everybody who's been injected
has myocarditis. Go.
I would say that some of these cases of stabbing chest pain is probably the microclots, what they call a vaso-occlusive crisis, and it's common in conditions like with sickle cell anemia, where the red blood cells become misshapen and clumped together, and they can block vessels.
Well, it's kind of like a swarm of clots.
All these people going to see cardiologists and having these scans done, and it's not showing anything. Why is no one looking at the blood?
It's crazy how they miss the biggest and most obvious thing, looking him right in the face. It's the
blood.
And if
you were to take ivermectin, that's known to break up those clots, and your chest pain goes away, I'd say there's a pretty good chance that the pain was coming from occlusion.
I don't know how else to read it. I agree. So there we go. Just a few headlines for you. Bird flu is now in cows. Confirmed. First time. And they're asking, is the milk safe? I would wonder if that virus... Oh, excuse me. There are no such things as viruses. I would still wonder if that virus has been tweaked. If they want to release something that is highly contagious, the avian flu, the bird flu, would be it. And if it's jumped into cattle somehow or been introduced into cattle somehow, we've got to keep our eye on that. We will. We'll watch that for you. Okay. Who's our first? Our first guest, sign in, please. Her name is Susan, and Susan took a stand, and the title of this little video is, it's from the Children's Health Defense, the Magic Bus, going all over the country collecting stories, firsthand stories, from people who have been damaged in one way or another by this whole catastrophe. This is titled, I Lost My Six-Figure salary, her whole job, because she refused to take the needle. And great job. No job is worth your life.
No.
Not that I can think of, anyway. All right, here we go. Are we ready? Anything else you want to add to that?
No, go ahead.
Great.
Okay, tell everyone your name, please.
Hi, I'm Susan Card.
And now you lost your job. So take
I
us
did.
Right back to what you were doing and what happened.
I was a welfare fraud investigator, making six figures a year. It was a good job, very good job.
I'm sorry, what was her job?
Was
welfare
she,
fraud?
Yeah.
And she said welfare fraud. Yes.
Well, an investigator, yeah.
Yeah, I thought I heard it right. Okay, there we go.
Was offered a religious exemption request or medical exemption request because the COVID vaccine was being mandated where I worked.
So where did you work?
I worked for the City and County of San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, at first I tried medical. I said, I'm just going to go the medical route because, you know, somebody will agree with me that this is not good medically, right? But no, nobody would risk it. Not anybody in California anyway that I could find. So my brother told me, he said, well, you know, they used aborted baby parts in research and development. And I went, what? And he said, oh, yeah. So, I mean, I knew, for me, I have a relationship with God. God was telling me, wait, and then he said no. And I found, anyway, I did research, found that, yes, in fact, they did use aborted baby parts in the research and development. So I filed for a religious exemption request, put it through, and they shot back immediately 10 extra questions. So it's like, well, have you gotten any other vaccines? Have you vaccinated your children? Do you take all these A, B, C, D, E, F, G medications? Because all of those use things that might also bother your conscience and so on and so forth. It was like an interrogation. But you know what? I came through. I made court case attachments and research attachments and did everything. And it came back rubber stamped, denied. I went for religious exemption. I even went to a pastor and got him to certify my beliefs. So, I mean, I did every single thing they asked me to do. And I turned it in, and I was rubber stamped denied, insufficient documentation. So my only the next recourse is to go to the human resources director. That was rubber stamped denied. Then it was sent
to... Did they give you a reason?
Insufficient documentation. They wouldn't answer me.
Okay.
So the union handles it for you, which that's a whole other story. But anyway, so I was, you know, they're saying, oh, this is the next thing. It goes to HR director. And then after that, it goes to an arbitrator. Well, it's been with that arbitrator since November of 2021. And that arbitrator has yet to set a date to solve any of that. And the... union has a class action lawsuit, but the word is, oh, that can take anywhere from 2 to 5 years. Well, in that time, I actually went out on a medical leave, but they fired me anyway, even though I was considered temporarily but fully disabled. They fired me while I was out on leave. Everybody said, they can't do that. They can't do that. The thing is, they...
What was her disability? Why was she considered disabled? Do we know? I don't think
sure.
She said that.
No.
I kind of come away with the thought that what would you expect in San Francisco except
right.
This kind of insanity? That
yeah.
City is in big trouble. All right.
It didn't matter what seemed legal or constitutional, they did. So fast forward, my disability ends. I apply for unemployment. And this is where they lock arms. The people that have enforced this in California. Unemployment denied me for, what did they call it? I can't think of what it's called. But basically, it's employee misconduct. Because I didn't follow a reasonable rule, which I don't know how it is reasonable to ask someone to put poison in your body that you don't agree with. And what worked in my favor was, but I had to wait a whole year. They were so backed up in California on appeals. I waited an entire year to go to an appeal hearing, and I won the appeal. I'm the only one I know that has won it, because the HR person that went to the appeal from San Francisco stated straight up, I said, well, you have yet to define for me what is insufficient documentation. And she went round and round. The judge asked her questions. Finally, she said, we didn't approve any exemption request. None. Zero. I'm like, I said, at what point were you, why did I go through that process if you had no intention of approving any of them? And she, of course, couldn't answer it. She said, we went with the federal mandate. And that was it. But my appeal.
You know, you notice how they all these bureaucrats and lower level functionaries, they always pass the buck.
Yeah.
Always. Or the feds ordered it, or the state ordered it. It's not me, it's somebody else.
Yep.
There's no accountability anymore. No, there's virtually none. All right, let's listen to a little more of this.
One, the very next morning, I got a decision in my favor. So, you know, it's not just the job that you lose. I went through at work, people, if you're not wanting to get the vaccine, people were very mean. They, you know, oh my God, those people are putting us at risk. You know, they're terrible. They're irresponsible. They're rude. They're stupid. They're all these things. And what's interesting is the building that I worked in the city and county of San Francisco, they literally had dozens upon dozens of people that gave each other COVID, even though they were all vaxxed. They couldn't be vaxxed and be in the building. So I just find it very interesting how much their arms were locked. I was not allowed to have information other than you were denied, and that's it.
Okay, I think this is probably emblematic of a lot of people and their experiences around the country who tried to stand on even common sense, reason, and logic with these bureaucrats who couldn't care less. It's funny, in a very black sort of way, how they all got together and forced these unproven death vax shots on millions of Americans. They did.
I know, it was mind-boggling. Mind-boggling.
I think back on it now, and you have to ask yourself, how? Why? Why did they do that? Why did they roll up? Why did they panic like that? Especially when the original release of the bioweapon virus was being dismissed right and left as being nothing more than a bad cold or a light flu. So what caused the panic?
No, I think it was the media hyping it up.
Of course
it
was.
Every time you turn the television on, you know, there's another headline.
That was it. Okay, you've got a little reader here, Aggie something. I think that's a name. Did you want to do that? Or hold it till later?
Are we done with videos? We're going to go to readers?
Well, we'll go to this one reader, then go back and listen to the nurses for a bit, I think.
All right. Well, we can just...
Is there a big punchline I'm missing in this other one here? I think we got
it's more saga. We can just, you know, include it with the other readers when we do those.
Okay. All right. Let me get the COVID nurses speak out. Now, they know a lot. I'm curious about this. See what they're going to say here. All right. This is, again, Children's Health Defense, the Magic Bus.
We're live. Okay, so tell us your name.
My name is Corinne Whitlow.
And you are?
Laura Estrella.
And you are both nurses?
Yes.
Right, what kind of a nurse are you?
I'm a cardiac nurse.
And you are?
I'm a registered nurse on the telemetry unit that takes care of stroke and oncology patients.
And you were both nurses during the COVID pandemic?
Yes. Correct.
Right, we're going to start with you. Tell us what you know, what you saw.
So in the beginning, it was a lot of pressure to receive the vaccine. So a lot of my fellow nurses and I, we did a lot of discussion. We ended up writing a lot of religious exemption letters for each other. And about 50% of my unit did not end up getting the shot. There was a lot of pressure to do so, you know, that you're going to lose your job. But they did not fall for it. And so we did end up with about a 50% acceptance rate, though, just because, and then they regretted it. I talked to a lot of people who had a lot of regret. We ended up going to seek legal counsel as to whether or not we would be dismissed from our jobs, what kind of recourse we would have. And we ended up, most of them went with mask mandates. I fought a lot against the mask mandates and ended up being on enforced LOA or leave of absence for 12 weeks because I was allergic to the masks they were requiring me to wear. And they finally found one I could wear, so I came back to work. Mainly after that started being patient experience. So it was patients who were coming in with pulmonary embolism, who were with myocarditis, with bacterial endocarditis. We had strokes, we had neurological deficit, all within a week or 2 weeks after receiving their vaccine. And I gave many of them, you know, alternatives on how what they could do to seek recourse for the injuries they received. I don't know if they ever pursued it, but it was hard seeing 25-year-olds, 35-year-olds coming in with heart attacks, with strokes, with endocarditis that required valve replacement in their heart because they received the vaccine.
And don't forget, this is going on right now, all the time. Younger people, all the time, with cancer, heart issues, liver issues, awful things going on. So this is, she's talking about the beginning of this whole nightmare and how quickly those people were hit just within a couple of weeks after. You kind of wonder, was the first wave of so-called vax different than later wave? Did they really vary the batches that much? Or is it just a question of people, their physiology, not at all ready or able to take that first shot? I said, what the hell is this? What's in our blood? And the body went kind of crazy.
That's right.
All right.
So then we also saw ICU patients who were getting remdesivir, who were ending up on ventilators, who ended up on dialysis because of remdesivir. And we did have a meeting with administration about our concerns. A group of nurses went, we talked to all of our hospital administrators, and we said, look, this is what we see happening. And there really was no change. We were completely ignored.
So what we've been seeing on the bus is the people who got the shot and with the injuries that you described, and then the people who did not get the shot that were put on remdesivir vented and went the other way. We're seeing two different, and it's consistent as we travel around.
That's been my experience
almost
as well.
The unvaccinated, you're going to go that way.
Yes.
The vaccinated, you're going to go. What, did you ever talk to your colleagues about what was going on?
Many times, but then the whole attitude was like, what can we do? We can't change hospital policy. We can't force the hospital to stop using remdesivir and start administering more vitamin C, more zinc, more vitamin D, any of the alternative modalities that we offered to suggest to them. And so I saw a family of 13 who came in with COVID. All of them ended up in the ICU. 10 of them survived. And 3 of them that didn't were the ones that were placed on the ventilators and had remdesivir. And it's difficult because I have coworkers who new parents who are newly pregnant moms who get the shot, and then their babies, I've seen one lose one to miscarriage at 7 months, one was stillborn, one died 9 hours after the birth of the baby because of clotting issues, and they were all vaccinated young moms. It's hard to watch, and it's hard to see the regret on their faces and listen to them say, I wish I'd never gotten that shot.
So for you, it's clear as day.
They knew, this nurse did, early on, exactly what was going on. These people were being killed. They knew it.
I know.
Put on remdesivir, forces them to go on the vent, they die. Well, we know someone who went that exact route and killed him. And the doctor gave him the remdesivir without his permission. So never assume anything when you go into a hospital. And we have to remember also that back in this day, when they were trying to mandate on all of these professional nurses and healthcare pros, whatever they were, that one-third of them, approximately, in the country, walked rather than take the shot. One-third.
Mm.
Is that right?
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shot was causing all these injuries.
Right. I was submitting emails almost daily to our director of medicine. This patient came in, had these symptoms, they got their shot this many days ago, this is clearly an attachment. They had no other prior medical history. There was no comorbidity. And so I was submitting emails almost daily with patients who came in with injuries.
So the one thing I'm finding really weird and confusing right now is I'm not getting people talking about, so they authorized the COVID shots for 6 months and above. Where are the injuries of those babies? We know those babies have been injured. And you're not in pediatrics,
no.
So you're not going to see them.
Right.
I need someone to come and tell me what's going on with those babies. We're not hearing anything. It's silence.
Right.
We send a lot of our babies to the Bay Area from the Central Valley here. And unfortunately, a lot of our physicians and nurses in the Bay Area complied with a lot of these things, and they're not going to speak up. And I think that's why you don't hear a lot about that. We have a friend who's a nurse in a pediatric department in the Bay Area, and she was one of the only people who refused the COVID shot. And she had to jump through hoops to get her own testing. She had to pay for her own testing. She had to go before work to get her test done. And she was like the only one. And there's a lot of things that get held above her head as well. They know she didn't get it. They know that she's a risk for them, and they target her really badly. And they still are giving her challenges. She's at the point now where every time she refuses a booster, she has to apply for a new exemption.
So one more question before we move on. So you said 50% did not get the shot, 50%
right,
did.
Right.
So the 50% that didn't get the shot were asked for leave of absence, right?
They weren't asked to leave their positions.
Oh,
no, we all got exemptions for them.
Okay.
Yeah, exemptions were all granted at my facility. I know there were other facilities in town that ended up firing their nurses who didn't get it. But for ours, we were able to keep all our jobs.
Because what we're hearing from the remdesivir deaths and the hospital protocol killing, that the ones that were fired were replaced with really ghastly, evil meanies, not the people that were there before. And so we're trying to get to the bottom of that. Who are these people that came in and replaced the unvaccinated nurses? And where did they come from, and why were they the ones that were reporting to
people? I know the one facility in our local area that did fire people for not getting the vaccine, they hired travelers that were unvaccinated, ironically. And oftentimes travelers just come, they get paid really high prices, and they do whatever they're told to do.
Right. There you go. So it's all about money. Mm-hmm. You pay me this amount of money and all.
And they're there for a very short period of time. So they do their job, they get their money, and they move on to the next thing.
I think they were
There's
up to three times more.
Travel nurse, again, the travel nurses, how much do they get paid? It's like $150,000 a year, isn't it, minimum?
Yeah, it's up there.
No, it's huge. It's way up there. All right. We have about 15 minutes total. You want to listen to any more of these gals for right now, or do you want to start going through the other material?
Well, that's a longer interview. If you want to hear the whole thing, it's, 20 minutes or so, 18 minutes?
18, yeah.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do some readers?
Yeah, I think we got the idea here that at least these two women, professionals, highly skilled professionals, what they had to go through, and the other lady before, she had to give up her job as a welfare fraud investigator. They were really pushing on people to take these shots. That in and of itself always alarmed me. That bothered me. Why are they pushing so hard? And if you can't connect those dots, then you're really not thinking at all. Is it
well, especially
ruthless?
When they expanded it to children that, were not at risk of dying.
No.
And children, if they were, allowed to build immunity naturally to this virus, would have attenuated it so that it, wouldn't have been a risk to the entire population.
I completely concur. Okay, let's go take a look at some more poignant, in some cases, issues of vax injury and real tragedy. And again, there are people listening right now who are in this category. And there are an awful lot of people listening right now who have lost loved ones and friends and acquaintances. This is much bigger than the mainstream media in whatever country you're in will ever let on. It's all the same game they play. They will not tell people the truth. They just don't. Okay, go ahead. Do you want to do that first one you sent, or shall we just jump into the file?
Oh, let's see. Well, yeah, let's... We could do Mike. Why don't we do Mike O'Mara, and then we'll do this woman who is every bit as articulate as Mike and going through uncannily similar experience.
Got it. All right. The one you sent me as a freelancer here, the kid laying down.
Yeah.
You tell me when you want to do that one. All right, I'll do... Go ahead.
Yeah, do Mike, and then we can do this one for contrast.
Okay. Very good. This is Mike O'Mara, and he is, by his own statements, nearing the end, and he's been very articulate and very eloquent in his descriptions. He takes no prisoners about what's happened to him. I am not going to live long enough to have to defy it in any big public way anyway, but there is no way in hell I would ever take another vaccine. None. They told us COVID would kill everyone. They told us the vaccine would end it, and everyone needed it, young, old, pregnant, immunocompromised, already sick with something, everyone. They told us once the vaccines rolled out, life would be normal again. Then, with millions dead and maimed for life from both the virus, pre-vaccine, and the vaccines themselves, they do nothing to help. They ignore and gaslight. They tell us now only hand washing, no masks, and also we're going to have more vaccines? When they have admitted publicly several times now that the old ones were neither safe nor effective? Whatever you think is true, whether you think the vaccines are fine or poison, or whether you think COVID is deadly or a cold slash flu, any way you might swing on these issues, can we not all see the hypocrisy, apathy, and straight up evil in our governments? Can we not even agree on that? They are killing us and using all of our last dollars to fund wars in other countries, killing tens of thousands there too. I will not comply. I will not say this is normal. I will not. So once again, Mike, putting it right on the line. Very, very clear, unmistakable. And he's living it, so he knows. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a woman named Aggie who is afflicted with chronic fatigue syndrome, has had some struggle with that, but was overcoming it, had overcame it, I would say, and then made the unfortunate choice of taking the shot. I am not living. I am waiting. I get up in the morning, do nothing all day, see no one all day. I go to bed. It's been the same for a very long time now. I have nothing to get up for. No reason to be here. I will never accept this as my life, so I am just waiting. Each day, waiting for time to pass and for that magical future when I am no longer tortured by this disease to arrive. It never does. I continue waiting. For a glimmer of good news or yet another treatment to try that would refuel my hope and make this waiting more bearable. Sometimes good news comes. It makes waiting in my nothingness easier. A bit of hope can do wonders, and then nothing happens. Then yet another treatment fails. Days, weeks, months, and years go by, and nothing has changed. Hope fades. The waiting returns to survival mode. As if in a line of fire, I get my head down, shut my eyes, and pray for this hell to pass me by, until relief in the form of hope arrives again. It always tends to be false hope, but I fall for it every time. That's how I'm still here, still in the nothingness, still wishing for time to pass, still waiting, but I cannot wait forever.
That girl can't be more than 18, 19.
I think she's older, but, you know, she's got a young face.
Well, that's for sure. Hope. That's what we should think of as one of the biggest casualties of this vax injury genocide. Hope. It kills it. You get set up and you get punched in the mouth. Set up, punched in the mouth. Hope isn't going to do it here.
Well, I see just a lot of confusion and floundering. People don't know where to turn. They start off typically just pursuing the standard routes, getting in to see some doctor in traditional conventional allopathic care, run up a bunch of tests that really don't show anything.
And most of them not wanting to even deal with it, I'll bet, at this point. They know.
They don't know how to treat this.
They
in their arsenal, they're mostly, have nothing but pharmaceuticals, which, if you're dealing with pain, okay, but, this really isn't getting to the root of the problem in order to resolve it.
No, I agree. Well, how many more young women are there like this and young men like this who are just devastated to the extent that they...
Countless.
They're homebound. They're bedbound. They're barely functional. And all they have is hope. Nothing else. And that gets dashed time and time again. Okay, another CJD victim. What do we have here? This looks familiar.
I think we did do that. I don't think we got to number 3.
Okay. I lost my brother a year and a half ago. He was 52. He worked out every day, a supervisor at a job for 30 years, rode a Harley, a great man. This is terrible. This disease has made me so mad, filled me with hate. It's still so hard to think about and make myself believe he is gone. He had vertigo symptoms for a few months. A lot of doctors thought it was just that. We got him to a bigger hospital where they ran all kinds of tests, including the spinal tap. Maybe a matter of 2 weeks, he went from vertigo to walking with a walker, so not able to walk or talk, and then to his passing. We were the only siblings in my family. He was 3 years younger than me. He was so strong. But this hated, sickening, disgusting disease doesn't care how strong you are. I was in healthcare for over 30 years and have never seen anything so fast, so crippling, debilitating, and scary all at one time. I'm sorry your wife is going through this. Nobody deserves this. I feel for your family. Stay close to her. Keep letting her know how much you love her and keep her comfortable. And someone asks, excuse me for the question, was your brother vaxxed against COVID before diagnosis, maybe with Pfizer or Moderna? Go ahead.
Let's see.
Number 4.
Yeah, I think there's one missing there. But anyway, I can't find it right now. So my sister was finally diagnosed 2 weeks ago at UCSF. This all started last April when she got pneumonia and then COVID. She never got any COVID shots or boosters. We noticed her walk was a little off in July. In August, her legs would just rapidly take off. She kept clearing her throat all the time and had a cough. In November, her legs were weak, so she started using a walker. We were going to different doctors and finally went to UCLA. They did all the testing and spinal taps, and they all came back undeterminate. We were sent to UCSF, and they said it was a form of CJD. We are being tested to see if it's genetic or not. No one in our family history ever had this as far back as my great-grandparents in the 1800s. Right now, my sister is in a wheelchair or a wheel walker. She can no longer walk. Her speech is garbled, and her handwriting is illegible. Very small letters. She still has an appetite, but chokes on water if she drinks too much. So we have to take her small sips through a straw. She has 24-hour care with caregivers and us as a family. It's a terrible disease. Her neurologist is Dr. Michael Gershwin on the video about CJD on this site. He is wonderful.
Well, so there's one man died, CJD, the first part we read. And now the woman's sister, I guess she's still alive. But, you know, how much longer? Remember, CJD was a disease that you just didn't see 5 years ago.
No, one in a million.
That's it. And now there are two people here. One is deceased, the first guy, now the sister. Neither of them vaxxed. As far as we know, the guy wasn't. It wasn't said that I remember. This girl was not. And they both come down with CJD. How did that happen? Ask yourself that. Prions, remember, are contagious in the sense that they can be spread. Right through your skin, they'll go. So is this a question of shedding again? Maybe.
Well, you know, the virus has that spike protein with the scrapie form of the prion, human prion protein, in it. So, you know, theoretically, the virus can induce CJD.
Same thing, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a spike protein. However it gets into the body, there is a risk for this.
Is that what we're dealing with? Is this just being spread in a viral sense?
It appears maybe. So. This is a weaponized virus. You know, the spike portion of it is lethal in many different ways. And that's why you really can't think of this thing as simply a flu.
No.
Yeah, you might have some flu-like symptoms and get over it or think that you're over it.
Right.
But once it's inside you, you don't know what it's doing.
And you don't know what that person next to you in the grocery line, what his or her health status is, vax status is, vax injured status is. You don't know if that person's carrying the virus and spreading it. And it's 1 out of 13 people, it was a week ago I think I read that, currently have it. That's the COVID virus. 1 out of 13.
That was a statistic that came out of the UK.
Was it?
Oh, I don't know. About a month or two ago. You know, what that figure is now, I don't know. But I would say this virus is now endemic because the people who have received the shots, most of them have acquired the virus now, and they don't seem to be able to get over it. So they're chronic carriers, and they're spreading it asymptomatically because their immune systems are not reacting to it thanks to that subclass of IgG antibodies, IgG4, that you're going to hear more and more about. But it allows them to essentially tolerate the virus and a spike, you know, and that's one of the reasons why they don't have symptoms.
And the reason they can tolerate it is because the immune system is no longer, it's disabled. It no longer sends out warning signals, symptom signals that you've got a problem. It's disabled.
Well, you know, the first part of the virus that the body will see is that spike.
Yeah.
And because the body has now been trained to ignore it like a common allergen, it is not going to mount much of a response to it. It's seen it, it's ignoring it. And so if this is a spike that's attached to a virus, then, you know, that virus is going to take hold within them and proliferate, and they probably are not going to have the wherewithal to overcome it.
No.
Because of the damage that's been done to their immune systems.
Right.
And that's just awfully convenient, isn't it?
It's all planned. We know that.
I found, the one that was missing. We kind of read this out of sequence. I should have read this thing first. This is someone who, well, his wife has been diagnosed with CJD, and his wife in...
Is this the second case in that string, then?
No,
first,
it should have been
the
first one.
The guy died? Okay, all right, go ahead.
He says, my wife was just diagnosed last week, but has been having symptoms since last April. Now she only speaks in phrases, and most of the time makes no sense. Anyone have experience or tips for the constant walking around and continued decrease in eating? The last 2 months, she has declined rapidly. Yeah. So, looking at this photo, she looks to be about 30, 35 years old, maybe.
That's just appalling. Something is spreading CJD, the prions, all right, or the spike that is creating the prions and the cascade and then the brain damage. And then ultimately, you're gone. And it's everyone who's described this describes it in the most horrific terms.
It's awful.
When your spouse or your brother or your sister or your son or daughter no longer recognizes you, their memories are gone. For all intents and purposes, they don't exist. They're still physically there, but the mind is gone. This is a particularly cruel and brutal thing. And the controllers knew damn well what they were doing. They knew this was going to be part of the fallout from these injections. And probably the virus as well. Just incredible. This is really, to a large degree, the planet evil now. It's been taken over by a lot of evil people. The good people out there, and many of you are more than included in that. You've been through this directly or indirectly. But the goodness on this planet has been really sequestered. It's not good. Somebody opened a door for me today, and I said, thank you very much. And that doesn't happen very often. Just a little polite gesture. If you do a little every day, do a little something that makes things a little better, that's one way we can fight back on this, not withdraw.
Yeah.
Okay, that was good. We've got a multiple chemical sensitivity reader here, which we'll do on Monday. That's another one. Taste, that's another one. We've got some other good things here as well. Okay, anything you want to add to this? And we're out of here.
No, that's good. That's plenty.
You're so easy to get along with. It amazes me.
I don't have fight in me.
You have a good evening. Thanks. Wonderful job. All right.
Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in a few minutes to talk about, you know that book, The Bitter Harvest? Damien Dumas is back tonight, and we're going to talk more about that. One of the most portentous books in many, many years. See, you can find it on the homepage there. The Last Harvest. Be right back.